This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for joining us. I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Bonnie North. 2 decades ago, some social scientists published some landmark research that uncovered some previously undiscovered insights into stressors that affect developing minds. The Adverse Childhood Experiences Study quantified the traumas that affected 17,000 adult patients years before.
But the more recent work by a pediatrician is connecting the dots between those traumatic experiences and physical ailments that are all too common among children in this country. Issues like ADHD, diabetes, asthma, and others. Nadine Burke-Harris is the founder and CEO of the Center for Youth Wellness in San Francisco. She is also author of the new book, The Deepest Well. She'll talk about her work tomorrow in Milwaukee, but ahead of that visit, she joins us by phone. It is a pleasure to speak with you.
It is an honor to talk with you.
It is an honor to talk with you as well. I wanted to start by maybe getting a working definition of a particular term that is key to this conversation. You write about three classes of stress or stress responses, I think. How do we distinguish between the three, the healthy and unhealthy forms of stress?
When we talk about our stress response, the medical science shows us that there are kind of three ways that we classify our stress response: positive stress response, tolerable stress response, and the toxic stress response. And positive stress response is normal. It's a healthy part of growth and development, and it's probably the thing that gets most of us up in the morning and make sure that we, you know, pay our bills and do all the things that we're supposed to do. And that is a brief activation of our stress response that is really time-limited, and it's in response to your kind of typical day-to-day stressors. And these things go back to normal after a short period of time. So if you imagine, for example, a child starting a new preschool or a daycare, that would be a bit of an anxiety-producing experience for the child. They get their body activates stress hormones, and then with healthy relationships, it comes back to normal, right? The tolerable stress response happens in our bodies in response to more significant stressors, things potentially like a natural disaster or the death of a loved one. And these can lead to more prolonged activation of our body's biological stress response, and in terms of the release of stress hormones like adrenaline and cortisol. But with the right protective buffering, with the right relationships from safe, stable, and nurturing adults, kids are able to recover, and that tolerable stress response can actually go back to baseline and doesn't cause long-term damage. The toxic stress response happens when kids are exposed to severe, chronic, or prolonged adversity. And what we see is long-term changes to our body's stress response system. And that leads to changes in brain structure and function, long-term changes to hormonal levels, changes to our immune system, and even the way our DNA is read and transcribed. And that could be as a result of things like abuse or neglect, or growing up in a household where there is domestic violence, or a parent is mentally ill or substance dependent.
Well, and these are all things that go under the category of adverse childhood experiences, the so-called ACE score, right?
That's exactly right. The CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, and Kaiser Permanente found was that certain types of adverse experiences in childhood, which they called adverse childhood experiences, are associated with significantly increased risk for health problems, things like heart disease and cancer and stroke and diabetes. And we now understand that it's because of this prolonged toxic stress response that happens in our bodies.
Right. So realizing that you cover the subject in thousands of words in your book, how did the light bulb go off for you that the physical issues that you were seeing in your patients on a more or less daily basis as a pediatrician, had quantifiable connections with the toxic stress that they were also experiencing?
For me, I grew up observing patterns in nature. My dad's a biochemist, and he, always was teaching me about the natural world and the science behind a lot of the patterns that we observe in the world.
Sounds like a really interesting childhood.
It was. It was actually. It was really fun, and in addition to that, with my training in public health, when I was seeing patient after patient who were referred to me for lots of different problems, for behavioral problems, health problems, asthma, ADHD, but what I observed was this trend that my patients who often had the worst outcomes were also the ones who had some pretty significant exposures to adversity. And I wanted to understand the science behind that pattern. And that is what set me on a path to doing the research around how early adversity affects children's developing brains and bodies.
You mentioned things like obesity and ADHD and diabetes and asthma, and we see these things as endemic in or epidemic proportions in especially impoverished parts of not just inner cities, but rural areas as well. Have we gotten to the point where we're approaching them in the right way yet, or is part of what you're writing about the needing the light bulb to go off for everyone else?
One of the big missed opportunities right now is that as a society, we are not systematically addressing childhood adversity as a root cause of many of the things that we're struggling with in our society, right? Both health problems and some of our society's biggest social problems as well. One of the things I talk about in The Deepest Well is when we understand the impact of early adversity on brain development and how an overactive stress response interferes with learning, we understand that adverse childhood experiences are not only at the root of a health crisis in America, they're also at the root of America's education crisis. And that's something that right now we're all dealing with the downstream effects, but we're not getting to the root. And that is what I hope to open people's eyes to a bit in The Deepest Well, is understand we can be much more effective when we understand what's the mechanism, what's the root cause, and then understand how do we interrupt that process, because that's what the science shows us.
This is an epidemic of toxic stress every bit as much as it's an epidemic of asthma or ADHD.
That's exactly right.
So the landmark ACEs study happened, 20 years ago. Why has it taken so long for this part of science to catch up?
Well, it is 20 years this year. It's very exciting. This is one thing that we see in science. Sometimes it takes time to translate these findings. But the big piece was that a lot of folks didn't understand the biology of the toxic stress response. What we knew was there was an association between early adversity and poor health outcomes, but in the past 20 years, one of the things that has really filled in is a much deeper understanding about how is it that our stress response becomes overactive, and then how does an overactive stress response damage our health? And that allows us to look at solutions, right? Things like the importance of recognizing symptoms of toxic stress to begin with and responding with reducing the dose of adversity and enhancing the ability of the caregiver to be a buffer to that stress.
This also has implications. I mean, we're talking, you're talking about very young patients, but toxic stress can have implications that last throughout a person's life, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And one of the most important things about this work is a recognition that it doesn't just go away, right? That there are many adults in this world that are living with an overactive stress response. And that impacts our health, it impacts how we parent, it impacts how we engage at work. And simply for adults, just doing your own assessment of adverse childhood experiences and looking at whether or not you might have an overactive stress response. And then, you know, thinking about solutions. What are the things that actually help to fight the toxic stress response? Things like regular exercise, good nutrition, and doing things like mental health, you know, good old-fashioned mental health that is still a really important intervention. Healthy relationships. These are things that help to buffer the stress response and improve health.
Are there bigger public policy implications for this work, too?
Huge. Huge.
Maybe yes. That was an obvious question.
Because, you know, right now we are spending, almost $3 trillion a year on healthcare, and 75% of that is for treatment of chronic disease. Having an adverse childhood experience score of 4 or more dramatically increases the risk for 7 out of 10 of the leading causes of death in the United States. We are spending this money on healthcare. We're spending this money on management of, addiction. We're spending this money on dealing with the opioid crisis. We're spending, all of these different things, and we haven't tackled early adversity as a root cause of that. And so what we need is the infrastructure and the resources to be able to do, to move from being reactive to doing some prevention. And that's why one of the most important things I believe that we can do right now is to make sure that every pediatrician in America is screening for adverse childhood experiences just as part of a routine physical exam. That simple change could make a dramatic difference in the lives and the outcomes of so many children.
Is PTSD a subset of this or a synonym for this?
That's a great question, and that's research that still needs to happen. We're beginning to tease that out a little bit more right now, but one of the important pieces about understanding the toxic stress response is that it's really a developmental injury, right? When kids are exposed to high doses of adversity, it changes their developmental trajectory. It changes the way their immune system develops, their brain develops, their hormonal systems develop, and even the way their DNA is read and transcribed. And when we look at PTSD, typically we don't think about that being associated with DNA changes, right? And so there's a lot more research that has to happen to understand, what falls into that PTSD category. Toxic stress is clearly associated with this overactivity of the stress response and these changes in our different body systems.
At what point is the body resilient enough? How old do you have to be before we stop worrying about the impact that toxic stress has on your genetic makeup?
Well, what the science shows is that the earlier we begin our interventions, the most important thing for helping kids heal is early detection and early intervention. And that's why universal screening is so important. But in terms of, at what point are folks no longer susceptible? That's another thing that we're still learning more about. We know that when we look at brain development, we know that high rates of neuroplasticity are happening until folks are about 25 years old, right? So we know that the brain is still organizing and structuring until about age 25. And really, a lot of the changes to brain development are a core piece of toxic stress. But understanding whether or not, when folks are totally out of the woods is a question that we're still answering.
Is there also a cyclical effect of this, that some of the, some of the stress can lead to long-term health consequences, which itself can lead to its own toxic stress?
Absolutely. There is a cyclical effect to it in the sense that when folks have an overactive stress response, they're more likely to have health problems that can lead to more problems later on. Like, we know that for folks who have high doses of adversity, they have higher risk of also having mental health and behavioral problems. And this has to do with the changes in the brain around the reward center of the brain. And so folks are, because of these changes in the brain, in part, folks are also more likely to engage in high-risk behavior, for example, right? And we know that high-risk behavior also puts health at risk, but it also makes folks more at greater risk for experiencing another trauma, right? And so this kind of cycle that happens, not just because of behaviors folks choose to do, but also because of the changes to brain structure and function, is really critical for us to understand and try to interrupt that cycle.
Would you say, are you optimistic about the trajectory we're on at this point?
Absolutely. Oh, my goodness. If there's one thing about this science, it's just that it's so hopeful. Because when we understand the biology of what's going on, we can be much more targeted in developing interventions. And it feels to me like we are on the verge of a public health revolution in, number one, getting the word out, raising awareness about this issue so that individuals can, you know, put their own oxygen masks on, look at their own adverse childhood experiences score, and understand how they can be part of breaking this intergenerational cycle and not handing down adverse childhood experiences to their children. And we're on a medical frontier. We're learning more than we ever have before, and we're understanding that there are interventions that help to heal a dysregulated stress response and reduce the impact of toxic stress. And that's what's so exciting to me.
Well, Nadine Burke-Harris, thank you so much for your time and your insights and your work.
Thank you so much. It's such a pleasure.
Nadine Burke-Harris is a pediatrician and founder and CEO of the Center for Youth Wellness in San Francisco's Bayview Hunters Point neighborhood. Her new book is called The Deepest Well, Healing the Long-Term Effects of Childhood Adversity, and she'll talk about her work tomorrow afternoon at Marquette University's Varsity Theater.